Hello everybody and happy new year. Now the first thing I'm going to say, guys, is I have listened to the feedback from you guys, and people have been saying to me, Mark, your audio levels are too low. So I'm hoping tonight you're going to say to me, hey Mark, your audio levels are good. And this is really weird because when I stream through StreamYard, which is the usual thing I use, it works really well. But when I stream through OBS, for some reason, it drops my audio really low beneath these guys who then come in through a virtual cable via Discord. So I'm hoping this works. You know, we've tested this multiple times. It's always embarrassing when it doesn't work, but I hope we've sorted the problem. So if you guys can tell me if you can hear me, tell me if my voice levels are okay, tell me how I sound, because it'd be great to hear that this is all working and it's a good start to the new year. I don't want to start like a patriarch and basically, you know, have a technical bumbling on the straight away. Anyway, Happy New Year to you all. I hope you all had a lovely Christmas. There's an awful lot to discuss tonight because, obviously, you guys will all have seen Elon Musk has been having a little bit of a turn. You know, he sort of betrayed everyone about a week ago, and now he's back on being, like, based Elon. So it's very strange, but we'll get into all of that. But first, I'm going to go across the screen in the way I can see him, and I'll start with you, Natty. Happy New Year, my friend. Thank you for coming on for the New Year's Roundup stream. It was a good stream. How have you been, and did you have a good Christmas?
Yeah, I've had a wonderful Christmas, and this is the last night where I won't have worked for the last 2 weeks. So for Christmas, I always take 2 weeks off, and it's been absolutely wonderful, especially with a very young child for the first time. So it's been lovely. It's been lovely.
I was going to ask that. How was Christmas with your own family?
Well, it was good. Although I think I said this to you on the year roundup stream we did, but we were more excited than he was in the end. You know, he wakes up, he's just chewing on the cardboard packaging and, you know, having a little play of a wrapping paper. And we've taken a load of time to wrap things, and there's presents from everyone we know. Half of them don't even get a look in. There's a stack of books, a stack of toys. But it's fantastic. It's a really nice feeling. And I said to you last week, it kind of refires the magic of Christmas. You kind of get that feeling when you're, I think there's like a sweet spot between the ages of 4 and maybe like 10 or 11 where Christmas is just absolutely, you know, the most wonderful thing. So I'm looking forward to enjoying that vicariously through my children.
I've got to say, I felt that, and it's really weird because when Sophia was very small, we were so excited and we were like, oh, come down, a Santa bean, look at all the presents. And she just sits there, pulls off the paper, ignores the toy and just thrashes around in the wrapping paper and starts eating it. And you're like, no, look at the gifts. But then they get a little bit older and this magic sets in where you take them to see Santa, they write a letter, they list what they want, they I'd really like this, and they get dead excited, and then it's the night before Christmas, and, you know, they put out the milk and the cookies, and we put out a carrot for the reindeer, and then in the morning they come down and they get to the kitchen and they're like, the cookies have been eaten, the milk's been drunk, look, the carrot's been eaten, oh my gosh, Santa's been, and you're like, oh, do you think you've got all your presents? And then they come in through the door and they see all the presents under the tree, and the excitement is amazing. And like Christmas Eve, Sophia just couldn't get to sleep and she kept jumping out of bed like, can I hear sleigh bells? All really, really wonderful, absolutely magical time for you to have a child, that sort of, and it kind of kicks in at like 3, then 4 is really good. This is 5 for us. 5, really, really good. You know, I'm not sure how much longer it'll be as good as this, but it's definitely magical when they're a baby, but you get more out of it than they do. But once you hit that sort of 3, 4, 5, it's really, really good. Anyway, yeah. Patriarch, I'll throw it over to you, my friend. Did you have a good Christmas? What did you get up to, mate?
Hello, everyone. I mean, seeing family as usual, which was nice this year. Last year, we wasn't in the UK for Christmas, so it's nice to catch up with family. And Yeah, I mean, just lots of food, and it's one of them, you know, just coming off the back of the push-up challenge, and you get to a place of fitness, and it's like you have to take two steps back by default, don't you, at Christmas, being surrounded by all the drink and chocolates.
But I hate to admit it, but I got in, you know, I was in fairly good shape after the press-up challenge, and then it's all down the drain for Christmas, you know,
yeah,
trifles and booze and chocolate and meat and crackers.
Yeah, I need to get back on it. But in general, yeah, it's been fun. And a lot of people got ill, actually, and it was knocking at the door for a while. And I only just about got ill. But I think a few drinks and a couple of hangovers kind of paved the way for it to creep in. So
can I ask you something?
Here we are.
Can I ask you something, Paul? You obviously didn't take any of the jabs, did you, when it was COVID?
No,
neither did I. And I don't think you did either, Natty. And it's kind of strange because there's been this thing sort of floating around. And we'll talk a bit about COVID because it's been in the papers a bit. We'll talk about that later. But one thing I find really interesting is kind of like there's this default thing now amongst the nationalist community where if somebody gets ill, the first thing anyone says is, were they jabbed? Were they jabbed? But it's really weird because everybody that I know who, you know, within our community, this Christmas has come down with something. And it's not just us. People who were jabbed have come down with it as well. But it just seems like we've had a really heavy flu season this year. And a lot of people have been out of action. And I'll tell you what, you know, it's rolled through my house as well. Obviously, no one in my house had the jabs. But I do think it's interesting that after all this COVID stuff...
I've got a bit of a theory on that anyway.
Go on there, mate. Go on. Give us your theory.
They're pushing the flu jab a lot harder. And I think they're actually just giving people the flu. You know, a standard vaccine is you give someone dosage of it. And the people that end up having this flu jab end up getting the flu anyway. So all that's happening is they're just pumping it into the circulation of society. So it's more prominent than before.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen it everywhere. I don't know if you've seen this, Natty, but everywhere I look, it's on the side of buses, it's on informational boards, it's in stations, and it's, have you had your flu jab? It might just be my area, obviously, because, you know, I don't stray out of my area to, like, different stations. Oh, do you have the same posters as we do? But, you know, you do travel, I do travel around a bit where I live, and it's been everywhere, this relentless pushing of the flu jab. Now, I've never, ever had a flu jab in my life, never. Don't see the point of them. Healthy people, why would you have it? But this year they've gone really, really hard on it. I don't know anyone that's had one myself, but have you seen all that?
I think there's probably two things happening there. Yeah. One is that for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, whatever, you could be conspiracy minded about if you wanted to, but it could just be a simple the NHS has an absolute ton of middle managers and now media managers and all the rest of it. So it could be something to do with that. But the other thing is that people like me and you and Patriarch and people who are listening are much more aware of it now because of the insane overreach on the messaging during COVID. Now, you can think what you want about what happened during COVID and whether the jabs were any good or whether there's really a thing called COVID. But the truth is, or the fact of that is that now, when you see an advert for a jab, you're going to be much more aware of it, more so than you would have been if, you know, back in 2018 or 2019, it would have probably just gone past your head and you wouldn't have realised.
Can I ask you this?
I know my auntie took it and some other people and they both end up getting it. So that's what I'm saying. I think they increase the dosage, what you'd normally give for a vaccine. So normally you'd give like a micro measure so that the body kind of adapts, learns the latest kind of flus that are going around. And then you're kind of immune for a while. And if you get a vaccine, you're supposed to not get the flu. But these people are getting the flu. So to me, it's like they're just giving them higher dosages of the flu and then just passing it on to other people. So
can I ask you guys something?
Kind of makes sense.
Like, because, look, I've never said COVID, like some people didn't think COVID existed and said the whole thing was just nonsense. It never even existed. It was just the flu. Now, I do think it existed because, you know, I got something with really weird symptoms that I'd never had before in my life where, and I believe that was COVID. I was constantly exhausted. I was slightly short of breath. My nostrils were constantly like burning, but I couldn't smell anything and I lost my sense of taste and then it came back. And I can accept that like COVID was real as a disease, but I just don't think it was. My sort of take on it always was that what they did is they took something that wasn't particularly dangerous, was basically more or less analogous to somewhere between a cold and a flu in the way it would affect normal people, but then told everyone it was the worst thing ever and forced these things on us for a mixture of profit and nefarious reasoning. But I remember when it was meant to be this sort of like pandemic, and everyone round my way was just out in the garden. They were, you know, mowing the lawn, you know, heading to B&Q. And it just felt like the whole thing felt so manufactured. And I don't want to get into this again because, like, we've got so many other really interesting things to talk about tonight. But I do remember this really weird thing about COVID where everyone was meant to be dying. But then these people were going into hospitals and just seeing like empty wards and nurses doing these TikTok videos and stuff. And it was really weird, wasn't it? Because it was almost like it was so manufactured. And the thing that got me with COVID is when they started prosecuting people for going into hospitals and taking photos. So you're not allowed to go into these hospitals where no one's there and take photos. It's like, why not? Why not? It's a public building.
I remember going into the A&E. Once I accidentally inflamed my stomach with this new fad diet that I was trying out, but that's another story.
Don't tell everyone about that, mate, because everyone will laugh at you. I laughed at you. It was a brilliant... No, please do, actually. What did you eat? What did you eat, Paul?
Well, a good friend of mine said to go on the keto diet and you know, fry everything in butter and it's great for you. And obviously, I was at my mum's at the time. And obviously she had some nice Utterly Butterly in the fridge. And
which isn't real butter, by the way.
And it wasn't butter, it was margarine. So basically after frying that and some chorizo sausage and all the other kind of high... What's the bad saturated fats?
The ones that you eat. We'll just say the ones that you ate.
Almost burned a hole in it, and yeah, I was in absolute agony. But I lost 5 kilo in a week, which was a bonus just before my wedding.
You lost 5 kilos because he was literally burnt a hole in his stomach and couldn't eat anything.
I went to the A&E. It was an absolute ghost town. But on the news, they were saying like the front lines and all the
they're overwhelmed.
Gray-headed. Old ages were sort of like stay safe, you know.
I remember frontline workers are overwhelmed. Nurses are doing like, you know, 20-hour shifts. The bodies are piling up, and then you went in there and you're like, it was dead. It was absolutely dead.
It was.
Like, what a scam. So, right, we need to move, guys, because we've got a real long run.
I think that woke up a lot of people when you kind of see firsthand in reality something completely contrary to what's actually in the news. It's like, hey, this isn't right. I think it made a lot of people question
the
narratives.
It certainly made a lot of people think, because... And I remember as well, because like all those daft nurses were doing these TikTok videos because they had nothing to do all day. And then it got like, and if you remember, there was then all that controversy where the government told them to stop doing it. So the government were like, look, we're not tolerating any more of these TikTok videos. Nurses doing the TikTok videos are going to be in like serious bother. And, you know, they were actually told, you know, you can't do this anymore because you're just making, you know, us all look stupid.
Yeah.
They were a very, very interesting wrinkle in the whole COVID times was those nurse TikToks, because it was impossible to watch them and not like feel, I don't know, real like hatred and disgust for what they're doing. It's like, whatever you think is happening, why are nurses doing these like choreographed dances, you know, when apparently people are dying and this tragic thing is happening and people are being separated from their families. There were real bad things the government was doing. I remember people's
not into the red.
We're in the red right now, so I'll get out of there, don't worry.
Quick. If we get blown up in the first game of the first session of the new year, I will blow my top.
We're clear.
Don't need to have a heart attack tonight. Yeah, I like, you look back on COVID and it was, and then we all had to clap for the NHS, and I remember when that silly old can you remember that silly old biddy who she was in the paper because she was literally snitching on her neighbours for not clapping for long enough. Do you want to do some more looting here? So you had this old woman who was like, oh, look, my neighbours didn't clap for long enough. I was clapping for 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah, people clapping outside.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
I remember where I was living at the moment, where I was living at the time, and it was fairly rural, and there weren't many houses around me. It was, like, completely pointless if you were going to do that. And yet, when the time came, because it was the middle of summer, I had all my windows open, I could just hear this, like, demented clapping from, you know, two houses in this tiny little hamlet in the middle of nowhere. What are you doing? Come on. And wasn't Nigel Farage banging a pot and pan to say...
Some people went really over the top, didn't they? So you had, like, people bang... Because wasn't it? It started off with clap, and then there's always some mong who's like, "Right, we clapping's not good enough. It's got to be make a noise for the NHS." And then make a noise goes to like people outside with pots and pans, and you know, smashing things together. And then you got Fat Bazza with his air horn, and you're like, "What the hell's going on?" And oh god, it was awful. It was awful. And it's, you know, and then you come out and you're like, what's going on? And Fat Bazza looks at you as if you're like a heretic, because, you know, fundamentally you're the one who doesn't know what's going on, but he's expelled all the air from his air horn that he bought from when he went down to Wembley. And it was terrible, wasn't it? It really was terrible. I mean, the victims of COVID was basically the nation as a whole.
Yeah, the other funny thing that's emerged from it is this idea of... someone may say, no, it predates COVID, but this idea of the NHS is like a national religion. Like, we must save the NHS. The NHS. Yeah. All praise the NHS.
It became like a god, didn't it? Like, we're well off target tonight, what we were going to talk about. Still,
during elections now, it's...
Where's the boy?
There we go. You in, Patreon? Elections now. The NHS is treated like a sacred idol. We can't risk the NHS. The NHS. You get those kind of liberal progressives talking about it. They're going to privatise the NHS. We've got to fight. We've got to
just find a compound, mate.
It's just an institution, you know.
Well, the weird thing is this. I don't think they're going to privatise the NHS, but this is a hot take and a big prediction from Marky C. I think they're going to make the NHS so bad, and it's going to be so overrun with migrants, like sponges, people that, you know, people in there to get like their methadone and all sorts, you know, like just the worst of the worst, that it's going to make it so if you need NHS care, it's not going to be a workable solution. So you're going to have this two-tier people. You're going to have the people who've got private healthcare and are paying like 100 quid a month or whatever premium, and they're going to be looked after like, you know, like royalty, basically. But if you're just, you know, Barry Normie and you're going in for, you know, a hip operation or something like that behind us, but guys, gunfight behind us. Multiple.
Oh, mate.
You know, I think what's
it's like the dentist, though, isn't it? I mean, it's you get like a discount on the off the NHS, but you still have to pay. So I think it'll just get like that, and you'll get less and less discount.
You see, I don't think they will, because I don't think any government will ever have the balls to say you've got to pay. I think they'll do it by the back door, as they say. You know, so I think what you're going to end up having is a situation where they will turn around and say, well, you're fully covered with the NHS, but basically that means you get like this cot out in the hallway. But, oh, you're with Bupa. Well, you go to the space age, you know, you go to the space age treatment centre, you know, where they've got this laser device that just obliterates cancer or something. And it's like, oh, okay, that's great. Oh, no, you're with the NHS, so we're going to give you some, we're going to give you some out of date paracetamol. And then, you know, you basically die. And I think that's what they're going to do. And I think the government will at some point incentivize using private healthcare. And I think the incentive will be some kind of tax break immediately. Like, you know, if you, for every sort of £50 you spend on private healthcare, they'll give you like, you know, £50 off your tax bill or something like that. So it becomes a tax break. And at that point, more and more people will do it. More and more private hospitals will open, and you'll get this divide of like the haves, the have nots. And eventually you'll end up, with like a system like you have in the US, where people who are really wealthy get treated so well, and people who aren't, you know, basically, you know, more or less don't get treatment, or you know, they're just screwed. I think it's going to be dark times. I think it's going to be really bad. And I think the thing that's going to make it even worse, which is really going to annoy people, and I suppose that you guys chime in if you think I'm wrong here, but I think there'll be some kind of exemption for migrants.
It's turned into like a modern feudalism then.
Yeah, but I think there'll be an exemption for migrants. I think the real rub will be that whilst, you know, you sort of average white Brits will be like, you know, in this sort of situation, in this horrible predicament, you'll end up with migrants.
We've already seen that in microcosm. I saw in the Traditional Britain group, someone posted an infographic, and I did ask for the source on this, but I didn't get it. So, you know, take it. Maybe it's not true, maybe it is, but they had a stats graph from Great Yarmouth, and it was like 90% of the people were, you know, foreign-born, taking up spaces in the NHS. And also, Serco, G4S, and these companies that are being paid millions and millions and millions to deal with migrants who are flooding in, governments importing, are these people's healthcare are being paid for as well. For whatever reason, probably to... So maybe it's political, so it doesn't strain the NHS. You've got Brits who have paid into the system their whole lives, you know, waiting 18 months or longer for basic operations. And these people coming in on boats or like fresh off the plane or whatever, and because of the government contracts that have been given out, like basically getting private healthcare, it's an absolute farce and a joke. And I don't understand how, well, I mean, I do understand, but it's shocking. It's such a like betrayal behind us, guys.
I'm doing all the... I got a crate on my own. I'm coming to help you.
Oh, no, they're just bots, I think.
So, guys, this week's been insane, hasn't it? Because last week, Musk had a major tantrum on Twitter. Absolutely massive tantrum. He said that, you know, he wants to increase legal immigration via H-1B visas. People saw it as a big betrayal. He was banning accounts left, right and centre. And it was sort of like no more based Musk. Musk was actually calling people racists, saying that all racists need to be kicked out of the Republican Party. That, you know, more or less going back on any sort of idea that America should be a white country that controls H-1B visa migration, which Trump has previously, to Trump's credit, Trump in 2016 made a big thing of like overhauling H-1B visas because he claimed it was a way of bringing in migrants to prevent, you know, to the detriment of the American workers. So, you know, got to praise people when they say the right thing, whether, you know, whether they carried through on it, I don't know. But basically, that was Trump's position. Now, Musk has sort of got Trump's arm up his back and is basically like, hey, we need more H-1B visas. It came out that Musk has fired or laid off huge numbers of Americans working for him and replaced them with cheap migrant labor in Tesla factories. Now, when you see a billionaire doing that, it's sickening, isn't it? Like, what does he save? Like a couple of dollars an hour on the wages? And, you know, he's a billionaire. He doesn't need that couple of dollars an hour. So people were ripping into Musk. I make a video about him saying, you know, calling it a rug pull. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he's back to wanting to be based Musk again. And now he's ripping into Starmer, ripping into the Labour government, saying that Jess Phillips, Keir Starmer and other members of the Labour government need to be jailed immediately. There needs to be a full inquest into the grooming scandal. And, you know, it's time for Labour to be out of power. I mean, what is Musk's game? Because it seems to me like one minute he's desperate to win over the right-wing, nationalist, patriotic, sort of racially aware audience that he's built on Twitter. Then the next minute, he completely spits on in their faces, does an about turn, and it emerges that he's been doing anything but racially conscious or, you know, even pro-American policy making. What do you make of all of this, guys?
Well, I've got two thoughts. The first is that Musk is a scumbag, okay? Now, it's almost... I know it's a sideshow, really, and Musk is an interesting character, but if you're so fickle as to be tricked by this guy, where he's calling you... I think he was calling people retards for espousing basic, very basic nationalist principles, protectionism and stuff like that. Is he stupid? Well, he's either stupid or so fickle that it doesn't matter.
Can I just cut across you there? He did that cringeworthy tweet where he said Indians are basically better workers and they do it for half the price. And then he said, insert mic drop emoji, like he was owning everyone.
I don't understand that they're not. I don't think they are at all, to be honest.
Well, we'll get to you in a minute and you can tell us all about the Indians, the Indian freelancers you've used. Go on, finish off your point now. Go on. Musk was going full cringe.
Musk, for anyone who's been plugged into anything that's been going on, you should already not really like Musk. But if you've heard what he said in the last week, and now he's attacking the Labour Party, you're like, let's go, Musk. He's a based guy. He's a based millionaire. He's going to save us. Then you're, quite frankly, you're an idiot. Okay. And this isn't black pilling, okay? You're not going to get anything from Musk. He's trying to get something from you. He's trying to take your energy, your political energy, as useless as that might be, given the system we live in, and appropriate it for himself, okay? In service of people like Giorgia Meloni and Nigel Farage, who are simply not, they're not friends of ours, and they're not going to do anything good for us. I mean, Meloni, I think it was within 5 days of getting into the leadership of Italy, basically went back on everything she'd said. Now, that hasn't happened in this country yet. I mean, you could say that Boris Johnson was a right winger, and he was British. Yeah, we're, you know, good old fashioned British people. Blah, blah, blah. And then what does he do? Immigration increases more than ever before under Boris Johnson. So, Musk and his ilk, Trump, Musk, this kind of Zio right alliance, are trying to engineer a Maloney or an AFD. I'm not sure about the AFD, an AFD, a Trump in this country. And I said to you, Mark, earlier that I think it just needs to happen so that we can get beyond it. Because rather than spend, you know, 8 to 10 years.
In dinner.
Okay. Hold that thought. Let's get the dance on the go, shall we, boys?
Well, I've got the trophy, so. I'm coming to you guys.
Okay.
Can you come down your hill? I can see. Okay. You need to come down the hill. I'll put it in the lowlands here, and we'll get the... We've got 38 seconds to get the dance on for Aunt Sally. Hold that thought. First dance of the year. Where is Patriot?
He's hanging around.
Very zesty dance.
Oh, hold on. There we go. That's
is this the kind of zesty dance Elon Musk does when he fools everyone?
I'm here, I'm coming.
When he rug pulls you and
replaces you. Yeah, when he rug pulls you, he stands in front of like a wall of cash.
He gets his way as well. Think how many savings there'll be on like toilets, because we won't need toilets anymore in this country. We'll just be open sewers in the street.
I do want to come in with a serious point. So, this is what always amazes me. It's kind of people's inner... So, about a week to 10 days ago, the big news was that Musk had rug-pulled everyone, that he betrayed the MAGA movement, that he was banning record numbers of accounts, that he was in for H-1B visas, that he'd staffed the Tesla places with cheap workers, and he was now the enemy. He was now the enemy. And there was Twitter spaces. Twitter spaces were getting shut down. You know, he was basically, you know, the bad guy. And this week, he said a couple of things about grooming gangs and Starmer must go. And the people who were calling him out last week are now celebrating as if King Arthur has just returned.
Yeah, that's one of the most depressing things to see. It's so absurd. You've got this guy who, if you're on Twitter, I guess you rely on
him. Ready up, Patriot!
You rely on him not banning you. He's just called you, like, retarded and said that, you know, sub-AEIQ Indian people from India who don't know how to use a toilet are better than you and are more hardworking than you. Now, there's a whole argument about what that actually means in terms of working hours and how you're now competing with a country where kids are forced to salvage through human waste piles for, like, tiny bits of metal to make a living. Oh, right, so we're going to be competing in the job market with these people. Great. You know, our productivity needs to be increased. Well, GDP's going up. Don't worry, guys. It's 0.01% increase on GDP. Well, now there's a landfill outside your house with, you know, 3 or 4 year old brown children rummaging through it for computer parts. Thank you.
One thing I said about them. I don't know if you saw. Did you see my video?
No, I haven't seen it.
So I've done a video on the Musk rug pull, and you want to see the thumbnail for it, mate. Just watch. If you haven't watched my video, guys, watch the video. Anyway, I'll throw it over to Patriot now. Patriot, what do you think about this? About Musk?
I think Musk's objectives are... I think he's a bit of a grifter, to be honest. And it was just sort of like the stars aligned somewhat, with the right wing needing some kind of voice, and Musk needing a platform like Twitter to integrate the future of his Neuralink. I think that's his end goal. But he needs a demographic base, a target base, and perfectly married with the, you know, sort of the right wing type of people who were marginalized on these other social platforms. So he's got this target base now. He's grifted towards them. And I just think he has certain talking points, and his liberalism comes out now and again, and then he has to backtrack and kind of just jump around all over the shop. So it just shows how he's not authentic to the talking points, but he needs the right wing somewhat to you know, to prop up his platform. So he's just the ultimate sort of grifter, and his end goals are really his own you know, projects and businesses that he wants to bring about. And on the subject of Indians, by the way, they're not the best workers. I think the best workers tend to be the Eastern Europeans in terms of freelancers, because they're generally more they have less, and they have a lot of sort of moral decency as well, whereas Indians tend to, from experience, if I have worked with them in the past, they tend to do the work just to pass it off, and then as soon as it's done, they, you know, there's no I think that there's a lack of moral decency there, in my opinion, and a lot of them actually pretend to be white Europeans themselves using fake profiles, because they know that people want to employ white Europeans more so than others, because, you know, the trust factor, the quality of work.
I'll say this. For the small number of jobs that I've placed on things like Fiverr, I've had a much better response from Eastern European people that I've used, or Russians, than I have from Indians. But that's obviously anecdotal. But yeah. But the interesting thing is, and this is one of the reasons I think that Musk, and I can't decide whether Musk is deliberately trying to destroy any right-wing things, or if he's just like a complete bumbling fool, is he then went and attacked Nigel Farage. So Nigel, he made this sort of overture to Farage that Farage needs to get Tommy Robinson on board with reform. And Farage turned around and was basically like, yeah, how about no? We don't want him on board with us. He's not our kind of guy. And Farage outlined why he didn't want Tommy Robinson on board with reform. And look, I'll put a very fine point on this. I've been to a Tommy Robinson event, and I can tell you this. Tommy Robinson events, there's a lot of energy there, and there's a lot of good people there. But there's a sizable minority, maybe 20%, maybe a little bit more. I couldn't give you an actual breakdown, who are there drinking large quantities of alcohol, smoking weed quite openly, doing other forms of drugs. And they're there for a tear-up and a bit of a Barney. And basically, that's not what Farage wants at a Reform Party conference. So what Farage doesn't want at the Reform conference is a load of drunk guys, you know, going to the bathroom to snort lines of coke and coming back singing "Ooh, Tommy, Tommy." That's just not what he wants. And, like, it's obvious why he doesn't want that. He wants a professional, you know, a good-looking organisation that normal people can feel comfortable at. And, like, you know, I'll say this about feeling comfortable. I was at the Tommy Robinson, the last big Tommy Robinson.
Yourself, isn't it? The strict.
What? Anyway, I was at the last big Tommy Robinson event, and I'll tell you this, afterwards I went to a Wetherspoons for just, you know, for a bite to eat, really. And we went there to grab some food, and it was, you know, it was all right. You know, I like going for a Wetherspoons to get some food. And there was a lot of Tommy Robinson fans there, and sort of every 5 minutes, a different group of these lads would burst into song, like, "Oh, Tommy, Tommy," and it was awful. And if you were a normal people in there and you'd gone out, like, if you're a normal family and you've just gone to London for the day and you're like, "Look, shall I have a bite to eat before we get on the train and go home?" It would have felt really uncomfortable. It wouldn't have felt like something that you want. You wouldn't have been like, "Oh, this is a perfect environment. This is great." You'd have felt like, "Oh God, this is terrible." You know, these guys, like, you know, banging their glasses on the table and all rowdy and drunk and singing and going mad. And, you know, Farage is going to look at that and say, "Right, I've got a professional organisation here that I want to, you know, at some point, take power with. Do I really want this "Ooh, Tommy, Tommy" crowd, or do I want to keep them out so we attract the right people?" And here's Musk, this apparent sort of genius billionaire. I mean, he's a billionaire, but whether he's a genius or not, I don't know. You know, saying, "Right, they're the people that Farage needs at the next reform conference." Well, and then when Farage is a bit like, "Well, no, actually, you know, Tommy does his thing, I do my thing, you know, and the two do not meet." Farage, you know, Musk then, because he's a complete child, goes into this sort of meltdown where he's like, "Oh my God, you know, Farage must go. Reform is a good party, but Farage must be ousted tomorrow because he didn't agree with me about Tommy Robinson." And I'm thinking, well, if you know, Musk got his way with Tommy, it would damage reform completely. So does he want reform to win? Is he trying to destroy reform? Is he clueless? You know, is he just sort of that guy that can't take no for an answer? What is it?
Yeah, interesting.
Here's what I think is the bottom line of this, okay? At the moment, I almost cringe talking about it like this, but the online right, the dissident right, is split into maybe two main factions. One of them is like the Jewish Zionist right, and that includes Tommy Robinson. And the other is like a deeply nationalistic, a kind of anti-Semitic right, which has gained in popularity since Trump, and has been gaining clout. And in 2016, these ideas were seemed to hold sway and were giving real energy to seemingly right-wing figures like Trump and Farage and people like Boris Johnson. But at the moment, there is none of that, and these people don't have to be listened to. When I say these people, I guess I'm including us in that as well. This attempt to, by what Elon Musk is doing at the moment, basically, with Trump, and I know he's turned on Farage now, but this kind of reemergence of Tommy Robinson and the introduction again of the Pakistani sex trafficking scandal.
2 seconds. Do you keep burping, Patriarch?
No. Not burping.
Because just a burping sound that keeps happening.
Nope. It could be my mouse hitting the table.
That is your mouse. It's always you, isn't it, mate? I knew it'd be you. I could just hear this weird noise that sounded like a miniature burp. Patriarch. Carry on, Natty.
I think this is an attempt to shore up, basically, and sanitise the dissident right, and stop and kind of cut off any anti-Zionist or anti-Semitic tendencies that it has, and keep the focus on Islam and, you know, the threat of Islam, which basically shores up wars in the Middle East. And I'll make a prediction. I don't like this prediction, but the kind of mainstreaming of Tommy Robinson again, because I know this goes in cycles, what it speaks to me is that for whoever is understanding where things are going, understands that we're going to see more kind of lone wolf Islamic ISIS style terrorist attacks, because Tommy Coyne absolutely goes to the moon when these things happen.
Tommy Coyne.
So I don't know if it's a preemptive attempt to get in. I don't like making that prediction, but given what we've seen recently, I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say that might happen.
But the weird thing with Musk, like, if he had anything about him, like, you'd look into Farage, and I'm not Farage's biggest fan, right? That goes without saying. But let's be fair to Farage, and let's look at what Farage has achieved. Farage has managed, whether people like it or not, he was the major player behind Brexit. He's the only outsider politician to lead two separate parties to actual victory at two separate national elections. He took UKIP to victory at a national election. Obviously, it was a European election. And then he took the then Brexit party, which then became Reform, to victory at another European election. He's the only anti-immigration, I say it in the loosest possible terms, you know, the only ever anti-immigration politician that includes people from the National Front, the Union of Fascists, the BNP, all of them. He's the only anti-immigration politician to ever get elected to Parliament. Okay, and you look at his record, and whether you love him or whether you hate him, and I'm not his biggest fan, but it is impressive. And to say it's not would be daft. And then you look at Tommy Robinson, and yes, he does bring big numbers to street gatherings, and he does pull in good numbers on social media, and he's always in the press. But when you look at success, it's incomparable. The success of Tommy Robinson compared to, you know, Farage, you know, every time Tommy Robinson has tried to engage in anything sensible, it's always backfired and never gone anywhere. So why would somebody as intelligent as Musk, do you think he doesn't know what I've just said? Is a Google search beyond him? Doesn't he have advisors? Doesn't he have people who look into these things? Like, if you assume that Musk is intelligent, well-read, well-informed, and knows what he's doing, then you'd have to conclude he is literally trying to force Nigel Farage, the most successful anti-immigration politician, you know, in the UK, in the whole history of the UK, you know, the total history of UK politics. He's trying to force him out. Why? Is he trying to destroy reform? Has he got a hard-on for Tommy Robinson? Is he not Zionist enough like Tommy is? Or is Musk just so petty that Farage says, well, actually, Elon, you're wrong about Tommy. So Elon just goes into a mental breakdown about it and is like, you've got to go. You can't do anything in politics ever again because you don't like something I said. What is it? Is he a baby? Is he nefarious? How do you even add this up?
Well, I don't think it's a given that he's clever and he's got advisors and this is a calculated move. I don't think we can make that.
Natty's rolling with, he's the richest man on the planet, but he's an absolute dickhead.
it seems like he's just being led around by the nose. And what is, like, seriously, what is Elon Musk doing? I know people have talked about this $100 billion donation to reform. That hasn't materialized. What was it?
Million, not billion.
Oh, what did I say? 100
billion. You said 100 billion. I was like, bloody hell, 100 billion. You'd probably buy the UK for that, mate.
Okay, yeah, 100 million. That hasn't materialized yet. All Elon Musk does is tweet and say things. I hate to be the guy who gets his willy out and pees all over the fireworks, right? But
do it, man. Do it.
There's nothing of substance here. He hasn't donated anything yet. What he's done is what he always does, is just talk and say things to, I don't know, get a response. And secondly, in my opinion, Tommy Robinson, if it is calculated, the calculation is that the boomers are ready for Tommy Robinson, the middle class, and now more I guess you call them the middle class. I don't know how you characterize it, but the reform voters, the middle England.
Yeah, the broad, we call them middle England, that broad middle England that sways every election.
But the calculation is they're ready, they're more now receptive given the past few years of mass immigration and the stop the boats rhetoric and all of that. They're more going to be more receptive to Tommy Robinson than they were before. I don't know if that's true, and I don't think it's true. Tommy Robinson is the perfect avatar for the far right in this country. You know, a loudmouth, booze-swilling, violent guy who leads pointless demos where people throw cans of beer around and fight with the police. I mean, what could be better?
The stench of weed hangs heavy in the air.
Yeah, exactly. What could be better for our media and political class than Tommy Robinson as a placeholder for the far right?
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is Musk is trying to screw any chance of the old political system being smashed by... Because look, whether you like reform or whether you don't like...
You think
like
he's a Trojan horse, then?
Well, I'm going to give you your say in a second. I'm just going to say, so whether you like... By the way, both of you need to take a Red Bull. But... Whether you like him or not, then, like, we all agree that the only likely electoral change that will displace the old system is Farage. The only one that can replace those two monolithic old parties is basically Farage. And what we're saying is that Musk is knowingly trying to screw that for some reason, which will actually lock us in to a longer cycle of Labour-Conservative, Conservative-Labour. Is that what he's trying to do? Patriarch. Sorry, mate, it's your turn. Drink your Red Bull.
Well, like I say, I think he's a grifter. And if he's not a grifter, then he's... I mean, he voted Biden. He voted for Biden around the previous election. So he is somewhat of a liberal, isn't he? And he could very well be placed and position himself as a bit of a Trojan horse globally. So, I just think he's definitely out for himself, and he's just grifting towards a target group that needs a voice.
I've got, by the way, there's a really good gun in here if anyone wants it. I'm sticking with my SKS, but there's a really good gun in there if you want it, Natty or Patriot. One thing I'm going to say is this, then. And this is an interesting question, because we started with COVID. Chief Moody says he's controlled opposition. We started with COVID, right? That's one thing we started with, is COVID. And COVID was a good place to jump off. Because I'm going to ask you this. And this is for the chat as well. Let's have some interaction. We've got $2 Super Chats. Thank you, guys. By the way, we don't ask for Super Chats tonight, but we always answer them. We're always grateful for them. But remember, this is a laid-back stream where we don't ask for money. We do this for your enjoyment. And because I like basically pushing myself to the point of almost having a heart attack every time we play a game. You know, it's fun. Natty's disconnected.
Yeah, my game just crashed, so I'm reloading. Hopefully it will let me rejoin.
It will. It always lets you rejoin, mate. We'll just guard you. We'll guard you. You're in the zone. Let's set a perimeter around Natty. I'll say this. This is the question. This is the question for the guys in the chat. So, chat, I want some heavy interaction. Let's get people in. Let's get you liking the chat. If you haven't liked the stream, like the bloody stream. But I'm going to ask you all this. And this is for you too as well, not leaving you guys out. Did Elon Musk take the jab? That's the question. Does anyone know? Did Musk get jabbed? Did he line up and have that COVID jab put in his arm? Because I always think that's a very telling thing. So you can be anti-immigration, you can be a little bit based, but the people who didn't take the jab tended to be the true, like, dissidents, the ones that were really like, hey, I didn't take the jab because, you know, I see through these things. And the people who saw through the COVID agenda and didn't get jabbed up, they were people who were pretty on the money, weren't they?
I see, and it reminds me of a funny meme. You know that meme with Leonardo DiCaprio going around with his, you know, with his face, smiley face, and then it says at the top, my new favourite insult, you sound vaccinated.
Well, Sally's interacting with us, and she's saying, I don't believe the elites took the real jab. They took photo opportunities to take fake ones. Well, look, regardless of whether he took the fake one or the real one, if he took the fake one and he faked it all, then he's an uber bad guy. If he took the real one, he's just a guy that doesn't really understand the world, despite claiming to. So the question is, does anyone know if there's a picture of Musk taking the COVID jab? Shall I ask my phone if there's a picture? Shall we see it? Elon Musk.
I'm back in the game now, so.
Yeah.
Enemy there.
Did Elon Musk take the COVID jab? It says he didn't take it, but he said he didn't take it. So that's interesting. He actually said he didn't take it.
Yeah, but I think if he didn't take it...
Somebody's posted one saying he did. In the end, he did take it. He said at first... So, okay, I've just read that more clearly. It says, first he said he was sceptical of it, but then he came out in support of it and said he took it. So, you know, take that as you will. You know, I'm getting tired of the Musk thing, because like Musk is such a two-faced guy. He spoke out about Sam on several occasions saying how bad the treatment of Sam Melia was, but he didn't give Sam back his Twitter account, did he? You know, he's spoken about the plight of Laura, but then didn't give her a Twitter account back. He talks about free speech. Well, he hasn't given me my Twitter account back. They don't even allow me to appeal that. So what I'm saying is, fundamentally, I don't think he's our guy. I approached him initially with cautious optimism, but now I look at him as a bit like someone who's trying to... I think he bought Twitter to make himself the king of Twitter. And once he was the king of Twitter, he has leveraged that again and again and again to basically influence elections, influence world opinion, etc., for his benefit. And I don't think he's working for our benefit. And the reason I don't think he's working for our benefit is because he's a billionaire. And I know that might sound like an odd reasoning, but why do people think that a guy who is so phenomenally wealthy, like he is, would be on the side of the little guy? Like, generally speaking, people who get that rich don't get that rich by helping us out, do they? They get that rich by generally screwing people like us over.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no incentive to stick his neck out. If he look, the simple thing is, there's no you can't talk around in circles with this. You're either pro-white, pro-nationalist, like the old ways, the European heritage that we have, or you're not. And it's not for economic reasons. It's not, you can't talk your way around it. It's not, oh, we don't want immigration because it's bad for the economy, or we don't want immigration because it's, you know, it's hurting the job market. No. We don't have immigration because it's destroying us as a people. It's destroying our history. Musk has never said anything even remotely like that, okay? Secondly, yeah. Musk is the wealthiest man in the world, one of the wealthiest men in the world. Why doesn't he fund a think tank to talk about the issues that he's tweeting about? Where's the think tank that's going to investigate properly and, you know, make a big stink and a shout and have a media presence about the Pakistani rape gangs? Where is the think tank or the institution that can go toe-to-toe with the kind of liberal, progressive, shitlib ones that constantly attack white people? Give us legal representation, stand up, you know, pay candidates, and make these kind of overtures. They don't exist. Elon Musk is the richest man in the world. What does he do? He sends a tweet with a little thumbs up emoji or an exclamation.
Yeah. And I'll tell you something else. You just, right. So PA, right, and I'm not just tooting my own horn, but PA set up the Political Prisoner Support Fund, where we raised £20,000 for the families of people unfairly jailed for social media tweets and for attending anti-migrant protests. Now, £20,000 for us is a lot of money, but I understand.
Yeah, that's small donations. That's small individual donations of £20 or £50.
That added up. Now, but wait a sec. He was saying these arrests are scandalous. Now, he could have given 20... He's a multi billionaire. You know, he buys things like Twitter for $49 billion. He probably makes hundreds and hundreds of millions every month in interest on his billions and his assets and all the rest. And it makes you think, if he did care, why doesn't he do what we're doing? And he could do it to such amazing effect.
Yeah, think of the coverage that would get as well. This is, look, his war, in quotation marks, that he's now waging on the Labour Party is nothing of the sort. It's, again, it's tweets. It's nothing. It's just words. It's empty words. You said on when we were talking earlier, Mark, you were saying, you know, the measure of someone is not what they say, but what they do. And you just have to keep that in mind with Musk. What is he really doing? He's just saying mean words about Keir Starmer and Jess Phillips. Wow. Again, where's the funding for opposition? Where's the think tanks? Where are the institutions? Where's the real media presence? Where's the investigative journalism that could be being done about this? It's nowhere to be found. It's just a guy with a thumbs up tweet. It's like Trump during the year of Floyd Mad, the summer of Floyd madness. You know, he's tweeting law and order. It's like, buddy, you're the president. Like, what are you doing about it?
Nothing. Yeah. You're the most powerful right. man in the country. And somebody said, could we get some police here? And you've given them a thumbs up on Twitter. You know, it's like, well, yeah. You know, maybe send some, please.
Yeah, it's just empty words. It's nothing. I can't stand it. And it's so depressing to see people get excited about this, or like it means something. It just doesn't. It doesn't.
Do you know
anything.
What? As well, when you look at people, like, look, I don't like. Don't get me wrong here, guys. Don't everyone leave the stream because I've said this. But like, I hate George Soros, right? But you've got to respect the fact that Soros puts his money where his mouth is. He's a billionaire, and when he sees a cause that he supports, he puts his money where his mouth is. Musk apparently sees all these causes he supports, and the best he can do is throw a you know, a thumbs up on Twitter, a like, or a you know, oh, I've reposted you on X.
I think the difference is, though, not you know, to play devil's advocate on that point.
Go on,
Soros can put his money in, and that's kind of perpetuating the global narrative, isn't it? You know, whereas Musk, for him to put his millions in, I mean,
your guns in this box,
he'd get
Patreon.
Turned on straight away, wouldn't he?
Your super guns in that box, if you want to get it. There's only one guy left.
Let me do something of a minor deep dive here. But Mark, do you remember one of the first books we read on the stream was the Transgender Industrial Complex?
Yeah,
by Scott Howard.
Really good book.
And it was really information heavy, and in a way, it was quite hard to read in some areas because there were so many citations. He'd done so much research. One of the clear points that came out of that book was how mainly wealthy Jews through institutions like the Ford Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, were funding loads of tiny, tiny, seemingly grassroots organizations. Oh, where are you guys?
Who's got it?
I am.
I know he's miles away.
What colour's Patreon?
Oh, no, I've got it right here. Hold on. Here we go.
What colour are you?
Blue? Am I blue? There we go.
Can't find you.
You've got 35 seconds.
Are you on a hill or something? Like, oh, there you are.
I'm just outside the compound. There you go.
Oh, man.
I've made it.
Wow.
Victory dance. Yeah, I would respect Musk a lot more if he just said, right, I'm setting aside, you know, £20 million, you know, Patriot made it, yay. You know, if he set aside 20 million and said, right, I'm going to set aside 20 million and I'm going to put aside another million to pay for organisational costs, and I'm going to help the families of those, you know, British people who were jailed. Now, if it had been blacks who were jailed, that's exactly what Soros and all these others would have done. It just makes me think Musk is disingenuous. But we've got three $1 super chats. So thank you for everyone who kindly, and well done to Natty for getting top dog.
Do you remember when?
Are we going to wait? This is the super chat.
Remember
chats?
When Stefan Molyneux?
What was that?
Peed everyone off by kicking off about $1 super chats.
What was that? Molyneux?
Stefan Molyneux made a video where he got angry on stream that people were sending him 50 cent or $2 super chats and said, you might as well not bother. Everyone turned on him.
Oh, I hate that kind of greed. It's like, for me, look, if I had my way, I would be independently wealthy. And I'd have so much money, I wouldn't have to ask for super chats. And I'd just do long streams. And I'd palm off, like, answering the emails and all that. And I'd just do streams all the time and talk to people and help people, spend more time helping people than I already do. That's the sort of things I love doing. You know, it's like I am, for every dollar super chat I get, I'm genuinely grateful. Spartan Sadukar gave a dollar and he said, Polish people are going to take over the UK. We have already monopolised 100% of your plumbing. Central plumbing master race. If you say bad things about Polish people, we will turn off your toilet. There is nothing you can do to stop us because you're afraid of touching poo. Empire Poland incoming. Yeah, I got to say.
Well, you're not going to be... Listen. You're not going to be competing with us. You're going to be competing with a new group of people who are absolutely not afraid of touching poo, okay? So, you know, your Polish supremacy, you wait till it runs up against Indian supremacy, buddy, and you're going to find out who really doesn't mind touching poo.
Yeah, you're going to have to fight the Indians.
It's not just a thing in the past, anyway. We've got so many street...
Oh, God. I'm going to add another map into the mix. What do you think, guys? Throw in a wrangle as well.
I don't mind where we go.
No, we've been doing really well tonight, so let's throw in the big one. Glenn19 gave a dollar. Thank you so much. He said, Mark, I emailed you the Noah Smith article, so you don't have to get behind the paywall to read it. Well, thank you, my friend. I haven't been up with my emails, as you may have noticed, but I'm starting again back at work on Monday, so thank you very much. And Glenn19 gave another dollar. Thank you so much. He says, there are no based billionaires. The rich have no need for nations. I agree. I mean, that is true. I think the chat are on fire tonight, really, with what they're saying about Musk.
That's a good point. That last super chat was Yeah, that's bang on the money. I mean, the fact is, if there were, we would know about it. And you can say, well, Musk is based. No, he's not. But what about the Koch brothers? Well, no, I'm afraid not. There are no shadowy billionaires who are funding genuine right-wing organizations. The shadow of billionaires funding, in scare quotes, right-wing organizations are Jews funding pro-Zionist organizations, which is what reform will turn into if it gets in, if it gets power at all. It will, you know, the Israel question, they'll be harder on it than probably the Labour Party and the Conservatives. That's what we've seen. And I think the AFD, I don't think the AFD is very good on Israel either. I'm not very well versed on the AFD, so sorry.
The AFD have got a lesbian leader who's got a migrant wife.
Yes, I've seen the pictures of the AFD leader.
And she's quite an attractive lady and she's well spoken. And I'm not saying she's not sincere in what she thinks, but look, if you're a leader of a nationalist party who's promising re-migration and tougher immigration controls, it's a major conflict of interests if you are someone like her, for two reasons. Patriot, do you keep whacking your mic or something? What mic are you using?
No.
Yeah. I keep hearing like a little bit of interference, that's all.
All right, I'll see if I can sort it.
He's got his mic hanging from the ceiling via a slinky.
Yeah, just... I've got a feeling he's wearing like one of those Nokia, like Nokia N95 old microphones, and it's like, yeah.
It just teletaped to his head.
Yeah. Like, I just keep hearing it. Yeah. Oh my god, look at the players we're up against this time, guys. Yeah, everyone's a level 100.
Don't worry about it, it's going to be a cakewalk. You know, don't panic.
Fighting box so far.
Mate, everyone on this plane is a level 100 except for us.
Where are they from?
I didn't see it. We're going to get absolutely smashed. So, basically, what was I asking? I forgot what he was even saying now. What were we talking about?
Oh, the AFD we're talking about.
Yeah, the AFD. So I can imagine that someone like her would firstly genuinely believe, like, because you get a lot of migrants coming here saying that they're fleeing Islamic countries because they're LGBT. That is a common thing. And secondly, you also get a lot of, you know, people who, you know, bring in foreign spouses. Well, what's going to be her answer to that? Because she has married a foreigner. She's going to have sympathies in that direction. And I just think it does present a couple of potential issues. And like, everyone's like, well, the AFD is so based, and yay AFD and remigration. But anyone that listened to PWR the other night with Sasha Rossmuller will have heard him talking about how, you know, his party tried to do a deal with the AFD and the AFD basically told them to go away and you know, actively works to block other nationalist parties and refuses to do deals with them. I don't know. I'm always very, very suspicious about these kind of mainstreamish nationalist parties that just sort of pop up, get loads of support. We're told they're the next big thing. The Daily Mail calls them the far right threat. And then they get the tiniest amount of power. And, you know, they just sort of morph into sort of like being another arm of the system.
Yeah. Also, you got to remember that we don't really understand the, like, the way German society works. We understand when we talk about the middle England voters, the kind of reform voters, we understand what that tranche of people kind of, not maybe not the way they think, but the way they think politically and the way they vote, we understand. But we don't get that with the AFD. So for us, it's fairly obvious that reform is like is basically Tory light. But if I'm sure if you're a German, you hear about the rise of the Reform Party and Nigel Farage. If you have right-wing tendencies, you probably think that's great. But yes, a right-wing party. But for us, it's like, no, no. So I'm sure it's the same for the Germans. They probably have the same, you know, right-wing Germans proper right-wing Germans are like, no, the AfD is just another Zionist party. We have to, they're going to take power at some point, and then they're going to betray us, and we have to get beyond that. Just like I said earlier with Nigel Farage, we are going to spin our wheels for God knows how long with Farage dancing around the idea of him becoming the Prime Minister. And if he does, which isn't a sure thing, if he does become the Prime Minister, it will be the same rug pull that Trump pulled in 2016. It'll be the same rug pull that Maloney pulled. The same walk back that
there is a silver lining to Farage, which I don't think there is for the other parties, and that's that in this country. So all the other countries you've talked about, they have never had such a stale two-party system as the UK. And the one thing I've got to give Farage is if he does get in, there is utility just to him getting in. Just for the sake of saying, well, that would finish the Tories, you know, or that would change British politics. Because in Italy, you regularly get these new parties spring up. You know, Germany have had multiple new parties and realignment post-Second World War, obviously. And the UK haven't. So I've got to give it to Nigel that if he does get in, he does create waves, that would be something that we haven't seen outside of like local councils, because you do get like local council independent groups and little weird, you know, like the Green Party taking Brighton or something like that. But we've never seen sort of an anti-immigration party make that kind of break at a national election, which they have. And you've got, you know, credit where it's due. If he manages to do that, that would not be a bad thing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why we celebrated George Galloway winning the election. And it's not that we like George Galloway or his policies. We celebrated that because it's a hammer blow to the two-party system or the uni-party system, because that's in reality, that's what it is. Now, it's not George Galloway, even very recently, has exposed himself as being this kind of sycophant to
I have no scope. Carry on.
So yeah, that's, you know, it's unfortunate, but yes, Farage victory will again be a massive, massive hammer blow to the two-party system. This two-party system in this country, but there's nothing there for us, I don't think, apart from that. So, like you said, silver lining.
You go, Natty. You're blasting people. I haven't seen anyone. So, right, we're going to change the topic slightly, because this is something I wanted to talk about. This is a bit of a fun topic, and then we'll get back on to Labour denying the grooming gang inquiry. But I don't know if you saw this, but one of our guys dug up an article about Elon Musk from some time ago. Now, apparently Elon Musk is an avid gamer and gets addicted to gaming. Okay, and I don't know if you know this, but he actually got caught out cheating in computer games.
Yes, he got caught cheating on Diablo, didn't he?
Yeah, he got Diablo.
He's top 20 in the world, isn't he, or something? Because I've seen him play on some servers, and he is legit top 20.
No, he got caught cheating, mate.
So yeah, okay. he's not legit. That's the point.
That's the point. He's not legit, and I just wanted to raise that with you guys.
He was streaming live, like him playing, like owning people and stuff.
Mate, right? All, like, right. Look, this is an education for you, Patriarch. This is an education for you, mate. Right? You know the top people in the world who are like really good athletes and run really fast and do all this stuff, right? You do know, don't you, mate, that like a lot of those people are actually...
Yeah, but that's under the hood, isn't it? If he's sharing his screen,
mate,
on a game like Diablo and then blitzing through and killing people, people would be able to spot the hacks.
No. There's streamers who stream all day with covert cheats, making serious bank and playing games, and cheating. It's a common thing. It's a very common thing. Cheating in online games and streaming it is something that people do regularly and they get caught out for eventually. It's something that, you know, there was a girl called Nadia. She was meant to be the world's best in Call of Duty. She was streaming, she was getting headshots, you know, like wiping out entire lobbies in Warzone on her own, like she knew where everyone was. And then she went, you know, the makers of Call of Duty were like, you're the best in the world, we've never seen a woman play like you, invited her to a tournament, and she, you know, never got out of the first circle. She just couldn't kill anyone. And it's a common thing.
I mean, it'd be interesting. I'd be up for reading that article.
But what I'm saying is, knowing how much we hate gaming cheats and how much they've ruined our fun on this game, what do you think the punishment should be to people who are caught cheating on computer games? Because I think it should be based on the severity that should dictate the number of fingers you have broken.
I think he should just be deported to India. He should have to live in India.
Yeah, that's pretty good actually. I'd have to go for that.
That's a fitting punishment for Elon Musk. And he can imbibe the sweet musk of the streets.
The sweet musk of the of the.
It does make you wonder, though. You know, when someone has sort of got all these different companies going on,
there's loads of good guns and weapons,
and all these different companies that he's running.
Oh,
and he's like a gamer that's super into.
Don't run around that corner.
There's someone close. I'm guessing they're close.
We need to get Natty. You?
Oh, wait, no, I've got self-rescue. I've got a revive kit, don't worry. Patriot, watch out.
Somebody sniped him. What are you doing? It's me, get in the building.
Alright. Yeah, so, do you think Musk could be just a front man? And all these companies, he's just a face.
Mate, I'm just amazed that you've open fired on me. Like, we've got, look, there's somebody.
I wasn't looking at the radar.
There's somebody, right, with a high-level sniper rifle that sniped Natty. We need to get our stuff together. We need to know where they are, because they're going to be a team of absolute god-tier pros who are closing in on our position.
Well, I'll go up to the roof then.
Just don't get yourself killed, is what I'm saying. But yeah, cheats in computer games, deport them to India. Yeah, definitely.
You know, you can learn how to be a tech whiz, a high productivity technical genius who works 80 hours a week for the benefit of us lazy white people, us lazy retarded white people.
It sounds like we're surrounded by them.
I need to get into your boy's building, I think.
I'm on the roof.
Well, don't get knocked down, mate. We all need to really be in the same building.
Funny thing is, one of the interesting things about computer games is that apart from lag and connection issues, it really is like a level playing field. You know, normally you start a map with a certain, you start a game, a competition with a certain loadout, or everyone's the same. So it's like, I think that's why people get into it so much, because it's not like you're doing a 100-meter sprint, but you're a short guy who's like 5'6", and you've got bow-legged, or you were born with bow legs, or whatever. You don't stand a chance. But you know, anyone in the world could be playing anyone else in the world a computer game, and for the most part, it's going to be a very, very even starting place. And I think that's why people hate cheaters so much. People, you know, despise them. There's people calling for decapitations for video game cheaters in the chat. You know, all sorts of horrible punishments. You know, for our generation
I'm coming back to you guys. Games,
there's no punishment too great for these people.
Where are you guys?
What about the index finger, mouse one finger?
Oh, have you ever seen Casino?
Yeah.
Have you seen what they do to the cheat in Casino?
I don't know, what is it? I can't remember.
They smash his fingers with a hammer, don't they? He's like,
yeah, that was a pretty good film, to be honest.
It is. Right. I still haven't got a bloody scope. I've only got.
What's your favourite gangster film?
Probably The Godfather, Goodfellas, and Casino.
The chat's making some pretty good comments that I can't read out, unfortunately. Ooh.
we have got some visitors. Oh,
there's a vehicle up ahead.
Yeah.
Okay, boys.
These are real boys.
Is he on the roof?
I don't know.
Hamper grenade in there?
I don't know. I think we need to back off.
Oh, he's on the roof. He's on the roof. He's on the roof.
Where is he?
Oh! Oh, get a grenade in! Come on! I think I got him. He's not down. He's not down.
I think we need to back off to a...
Yeah, we need to get through him as well. He's in the way. Uh-oh.
We need to...
Okay, I'm following you, Mark.
Ah! Oh. Where is he?
Off on the roof.
I'm coming back to you.
Ah.
Yeah, oh.
Did he get you?
Yeah, yeah. Quick, quick! Bloody!
I can't get you. He's on the roof. Watch.
Yeah! I thought you said you'd got him with the grenade.
No, 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 no. I injured him.
Oh! Yeah, okay. Yeah, whatever.
That was terrible.
Come on.
Where is he
now? Oh, Patriarch. Forget it.
Patriarch with the clutch. He's around. Oh. Don't grab my stuff. Look around. He's around you somewhere. There's loads of them. Okay.
Well, Patriarch's just useless. Absolutely useless. Like, I can honestly, mate, I want to see. Oh, of course. They're all the people doing the jumping with the... Yeah, okay, you disgusting cheating Turks.
It's all right. I don't think we were paying good enough attention because we're talking.
Well, no, Patriarch wasn't even looking where they were.
I didn't know where they were, did I? The 1 minute on the building, next minute they're just everywhere.
Well, boys, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah, I've reported that, dickhead. And where are they all playing from? Turkey. Yeah, go back to your dump. That's why we don't play that map, because it's just cheat central. And they all have the stupid armour and the stupid headsets. Just piss off. We were talking about this beforehand, all that shite. Absolute scum.
Deported to India. Deport them to... They're probably in India. I mean, come on,
they
guys.
Probably are in India.
Musk cheating. Patriot, you can cheat at the top. You can be really, really good. You can be in like the top 5% and then get to the top, you know, 0.1% with cheats. And to anyone who's uninitiated, you're going to look like, you know, a natural. You're going to be so good you look like a natural, but you just, to give you that edge amongst your peers who are the top 1%, you do some system manipulation. So it looks legit. Like, you see him on a live stream going around killing people, and it's very impressive. But,
well, not only that, I'll tell you guys something. I watch a lot of speed running and content around people who are like very good at games, and the number of people who are world number one, world record holders, you know, completely dominate leaderboards in some of the most prestigious games, and they make serious money from doing it. They get absolutely exposed for being cheats. I'll give you a great example. In a game called, you know, Guitar Hero, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, like at one point, Guitar Hero is one of the biggest games on the planet. You know, it's like everywhere, everyone was playing it. And there's a player called Shmooey, and he was widely recognized as the world number one in Guitar Hero. And he was... So the Guitar Hero fan base actually have... the Guitar Hero fan base actually create new songs and new challenges so that they constantly have new things to do. And this guy was breaking all the records, doing all of the songs and all the new songs. And they found out what he was actually doing is he was playing the Guitar Hero songs at half speed. And then, so every note was perfect. He slowed everything down using cheat software, hit every note, then put that up online, but did a sort of, you know, did a camera of him playing it, and it looked good enough, you know what I mean? And everyone was like, wow, he's absolutely amazing. Now, I'm not saying he was a bad player. He wasn't. It's not like us picking up Guitar Hero and just sort of cheating. He was a well-established good player, but he pushed himself to the best in the world by cheating. And it is a common thing that when people get very close to that peak, they get really frustrated that they're not at the top. So yeah, you do get like kids like them who were just, you know, I mean, they appeared like they were using aimbots. They seemed to know where we are. Like, we didn't know where they are, but like, they knew exactly where we were. So yeah, I probably think they were cheating, but they might just be like the best in the world, you know, playing, you know, they might be, but you do get a lot of people who are very, very good, get very frustrated at not being literally the best. And then they go that extra mile. And it's actually really sad, but it's very, very common.
Yeah, I mean, what was Lance Armstrong was...
Yeah.
It wasn't like he was a bad cyclist or a bad...
It wasn't like, that Lance is rubbish on his bike.
Yeah, he's like a fat 20-stone bloke who gets on a bike and then just paces everyone. He's like a serious athlete, but it's just that last little bit of edge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's sad, but it's a common thing. Like, for me, I've been sort of like, you know, top level in certain games. I remember there was a game on the Wii called Ghost Squad, and it was a conversion of a Sega arcade game, and it had an online leaderboard, and I was ranked number third in the world. And I had this perfect playthrough, and I had to make one final shot, which is an easy shot to make usually, but my hand was shaking because I was getting really nervous, like, am I going to do it? And I missed the last shot, and I failed to get that second spot on the leaderboard. Now, I didn't cheat, but I did go into a rage, and I booted over, what was it? It was, I had one of those... clothes horses. All the clothes were on the clothes horse next to the thing, and in my rage I booted the clothes horse. I didn't have any shoes on, and my feet came up in the worst welts. It was just like absolute agony, I tell you. It was the stupidest thing I've ever done, but it was, well, not the stupidest thing I've ever done, but it was very, very painful. And I can tell you this, I wouldn't recommend kicking a clothes horse to anyone.
Noted. Yeah, I don't know. I've never even been tempted to cheat on video games, computer games. It doesn't, like I said, it's an even playing field, and
I remember properly cheating with intent, and that was the old Diablo 1, like the RPG on the PC. Like, I was probably about 15, 14. And it was so funny, though. I met this guy once, and he was like, he gifted me with all these great items, and I was like, how'd you do it? How'd you get it? And then he told me where to go, so I ended up getting one. And I'd get these awesome items, and then I'd lure them down into the jungle. Just, it's funny. So that was, I didn't really...
You cheated in an online game?
It was funny, that was.
Right, but donations in chat for Patriarch's Flight of India.
I'm setting up the give, send, go as we speak. Send Patriarch to India. Support
Patriarch to India.
You are scum, mate. You are scum. You've really outdone yourself tonight.
And I was, you know, this guy was just getting these items from, like, from nowhere.
Mate, whatever you say isn't going to make this any better. I'm going to hate you for life now.
Yeah.
Right, we're going to... Let's get in this van and move. There's two reasons. You'll
be Elon Musk of the Nationalist A-Team, Patriot. I think that's what we're saying.
So what do you think about the Labour Party thing? By the way, I'm dropping a Foscope for anyone who wants it. It's just there. What does everyone think then about... Oh, bloody hell.
Oh, there's that.
What's that?
Got him.
Right.
Well, so the Labour Party.
I've marked it.
We're talking about... What are we talking about here?
We're talking...
Resurgence
what of... What are you doing? Go across the bridge, mate. We're talking about the fact that the Labour Party have publicly said they are going to deny any investigation or inquiry into the grooming scandal.
Yeah. And this, the grooming scandal was...
We'll take it.
The grooming gang scandal has come up again, partly because of the sentencing notes that came out. Or where was
they were horrific, weren't they?
Yeah, really disgusting stuff. And for most of us, I mean, I've known about this. I know that kind of thing was happening, but then, you know, every time you read about it, it kind of triggers you all over again. It's so horrific.
I don't know what I found more objectionable, because obviously the treatment of the girls was horrific. But then you hear that their dads tried to break them free from the clutches of these groomers. And they got arrested by the police. And at that point, you're not sure who you hate more, are you? The police or the actual grooming gangs? Because the police are literally complicit. And none of those police officers will have lost their jobs. None of those police officers will have, you know, lost their police pension. And I've got to say this. I have no time for the police, as people know. But to know that these cops were there pulling concerned dads away from defending their daughters, you've got to wish that those, you know, like, hearing that makes you just hope that those officers all, you know, took six COVID jabs and their heads explode.
It's really horrific. I mean, the fact that the only people who have been jailed or had to go through the justice system are some of just the, like, the end line of rapists have been put in prison, mostly on short sentences, and a lot of them have got out, you know, be out early and all the rest of that stuff. No one involved in the social services, no one involved in the councils who were setting the agenda on this, no one from the police has ever been held to account for any of this stuff. And, you know, we have to hear day in, day out about systemic racism in the police and systemic racism in the government and the council. And yet here was a real systemic abuse of power.
Systemic anti-white racism.
Exactly, that led to, like, 11-year-old girls, 9-year-old girls being raped by multiple men. And what?
Yeah, day after day.
Pretend it didn't happen. It's horrific. It's disgusting. I almost can't talk about it because the urge to say what I think should happen to the people who allowed this to happen would see me in jail.
Yeah, that's the amazing thing, though, because if I said what I think about those police officers and what I think their punishment should be, I'm sure I'd get a knock on the door the next morning, because people are like, you can't say that about a police officer. And you're like, but these police officers were literally knowingly facilitating the rape of 11-year-old girls in order to protect multiculturalism in general. You know, they were more worried, those coppers were more worried that someone would point the finger at a Muslim rapist than they were that the rape was taking place in the first place.
Yeah, and of course, you know, tangentially to this now, we have these Twitter personalities coming out and saying, well, you know, whatever happened in Rotherham was bad, and, it, you know, as bad as that was, the real horror, I think this is a quote, the real horror is that the intentions behind not holding anyone to account for this were pure and were good, and it was actually a good thing that the state was doing covering this up and allowing it to happen, because the intention behind it was not to stoke racial tensions. It's like, if the end result of your desire not to stoke racial tensions is 9-year-old girls being raped by 40 or 50 men, and, you know, in some cases killed,
well, okay, anyone that thinks that down cases, yeah, anyone that thinks the cover-up of the grooming scandal,
corrupt person.
Yeah, anyone who thinks that the cover-up of the grooming scandal was a positive thing and that those girls deserve to be silenced just needs a visit from the cancer fairy, don't they?
It's the idea that the intentions behind the cover-up were good, and therefore, you know, whatever the crimes that were taking place, whoever was complicit in it, the intention behind the cover-up was pure. You know, well, you can't blame the social services and the police, because they were trying not to be racist. And you know, racism is a worse crime, as we know, than child rape and murder and torture and kidnap. I mean, there's only one crime worse than racism, and that's anti-Semitism. So, you know, I've young girls being raped by hordes of brown men. That's bad, but there's something much worse, and that's the potential for racism. That is literally the way that the British government, the police, and social services viewed it. That is exactly how they view it. That the potential for racism is worse than young children being raped. Okay, I'm sitting here and I'm like, my skin's tingling with anger. I'm thinking about this. You know, there's so much I want to say, but I can't.
No, you can't. And that's the crazy thing, isn't it? You know, this is the crazy thing. There is an entire state surveillance and state apparatus set up to prevent us speaking about this and to prevent us articulating ourselves. But there is no state apparatus and no actual, you know, system set up to protect the girls who are the victims. The girls are basically these unknown, unnamed victims of this most horrific wave of targeted anti-white racism. But the system is more concerned that we're speaking tonight. You know, there'll be people who are more concerned about us speaking tonight about this than they are about these actual rapes. I've done debates with people like that odious Destiny, you know, and they're desperate to either, you know, to either debunk it ever happened and deny it ever happened, when they're the believe all, you know, they're the believe every woman kind of people, or worse still, they understand it happened and they know it happened and they accept it happened, but they still think it should never be spoken of. It's just so disgusting.
There's a clip, actually, you've just reminded me. There's a clip. Who's that? He was like Destiny, that fat... Vouch, that's the
yeah,
one.
Yeah, the paedophile,
he got caught with child porn on his computer. There was a clip of him interviewing a girl who was a rape victim. And, you know, he was believe all women, progressive. And she revealed... I think he was watching a clip where she was being interviewed about her attack and her story. And he was all on board. And the moment she revealed that her rapist was actually a foreign man or a black guy, I can't remember what it was, he instantly switched and he was like, oh, she's just a liar, she's a political pawn. Whereas before he had been like, oh yeah, this poor woman and this poor girl... She revealed that her rapist was like a non-white person, and all of a sudden he flips and he's like, she's a liar, she's just doing this for political points, she's pumping up a political message. It's just like, this is horrific.
Do you want that crate, Patriot? I'll cover you.
Ideological entrapment or ideological enslavement.
Oh, they are. If you'd said to them, you know, a fat old white man with grey hair touched her, he'd be like, right, string him up by the testicles. You know, they'd want, you know, absolute rage, people out on the streets. You say that it's, you know, a non-white who's done it. And at that point, I'd got you, man.
Yeah.
I'd got you.
It's not theoretical either. This is exactly what happened in... Oh, Jesus, I'm down. Okay, we got a sniper.
Woof.
I think I'm going to get killed here. He's going to get me.
Keep going.
Oh, no, I got it. He's up there somewhere.
So that's our real guy.
Okay. How many left? 15 remaining.
So he's going to be up. He's come for the crate, you see. I think he saw us. Have you got a read on him?
I don't. It was like 310, 325.
Well, look, we've got the city and we've got centre zone. So should we just stay here in these buildings, gang up, and just look after each other?
Yeah, I think, forget about looting now. Let's think tactically, boys.
Here he is. I can see him. He's running down the hill. He's running down the hill.
Okay, whereabouts?
We don't all want to stun together. We want to fan out a little bit in case of a grenade.
I'll attempt about a second.
There he is. Got him.
Nice, nice.
But there might be another one. Well, no, he went down straight away.
Yeah,
he did.
There's shots over there, though.
Well, we don't know. That could be just like...
Yeah, that...
That could be something else, but it was a good shot, that was. I was trying to sort of like... Don't, Patriarch, don't. Like, I said we've got to fan out, but I didn't say, like, go the other side of the wall into the danger zone, did I? I swear, you tried to take years off my life, you do, with your tactics.
I don't have a helmet anymore, God damn it.
You need to get one.
Just quickly, the other thing is that the state's inability to be honest about this problem and this horrific abuse.
There was a helmet on a body over here, three helm, I think. Okay. It might have a little bit of damage on.
Mate, I've got it, yeah. It's in there.
The state's inability to be honest, not that I care about this, but leads to increased racism because they can't, you know, now every brown person, if you're aware of what happened, every brown person just becomes the face of this horrific problem that they covered up.
I've got to say, Natty, you're going the wrong way.
Where's this coming from? These sound like bots, boy.
Right.
Eight.
Five people left. Look, I'll say this. And this is one of the things why I believe they went soft on the grooming gangs. I don't think it's just a matter of it being people of colour. I think the issue is, for that level of criminality to take place, there must have been community collusion. So you can't, you know, the number of victims, the number of men involved... There must have been wider collusion from within the Muslim community. So you've probably heard interviews of Muslim women who say, well, it wasn't actually a crime in our eyes because, you know, we don't perceive it to be that because they weren't Islamic and we don't, you know, we believe that if our men use those women in that way, it doesn't count. Like, to them, an affair, for it to be an affair or something nefarious, it has to be with a fellow Muslim. And because of that, I think the state were even more worried. Like, this wasn't like a lone black man. Like, there was that horrific case where that poor girl was raped to death, literally raped to death on a park bench. And she was raped to death by a black man. But he was a lone black man. He didn't do it with the support of other black women or other black men. He wasn't sheltered by a community. You know, he did it as a lone patriarch. Don't be stupid. Well done, mate.
Got fired from that hill again.
There where he is, though.
We do.
Is that there? He's sort of north way.
There's four people left, so it could be a team of four just against us.
The zone's coming in, boys.
Yeah, I think we're going to have the zone, and he's going to have to come to us. But we've got to be careful. Right. It's closing. So what I'm saying is... You know, that horrific...
Oh, I know where he is, exactly. He's, like, literally north, exactly, behind a tree.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see him. I think I see him, yeah. Oh, he's got to come here.
I'll tell you when he starts moving out.
Tag the tree, Patriot. F3, if you can.
Don't push Patriot to do something. Oh, bloody hell, I was on the wrong tree. Hit him twice.
He got a shot on me.
You need to...
Guys.
I'm healing up, don't worry.
I can hear more multiple guys around.
Uh-oh. Oh, yeah, there's people on the balcony behind you, Patriot. Mark it in. On the balcony next to Patriot, or he's on the roof next to Patriot, and we no longer have the zone here, which is not good.
Isn't he going to have to leave his...
That's what I thought, yeah, but I haven't seen it yet.
Moving slowly.
I think he might still be in the zone, you know.
He's moved.
Or Christ, zone. Uh-oh. Oh, I'm going to go down here. No, I'm not. Am I going to make it?
I'm going to drop out the window.
Yeah, I'm down. I got the zone, boys. He's on the... there's two of them on the little shed behind you, Patriarch. South.
We're going to lose this one as well. That's disappointing.
He's lost to me. There's another guy out there. Oh.
Yeah, pitch up. Ciao.
Are you alright, Patriarch?
Moving! Patriarch! Oh, damn it.
Didn't know you could jump on that. I'm inside now. Yeah, he's just dropped in the window.
Oh no.
In the house.
Nice.
Another guy's coming round.
Oh. Second. What?
I killed two of them. I killed two of them.
Pretty good finish by you, unfortunately. Not so good for me.
No. That brings us all... Well, we've got time for a quick one, haven't we, on the quick map? Because we've got 15
minutes.
That was disappointing. I really did well there.
You did.
Okay.
It's like we're on a downer now, because I'm just thinking about this goddamn...
My heart is pounding after that. I go, right.
I don't know. I want to see. Okay, how about this? How about this for a question? I'll put to you two boys. Would you rather that there was a kind of truth and reconciliation about this, and it all came out. There was an understanding of who was doing this, why it was happening, how it was being allowed to cover up. It was put on record, if you like, and not just a bugbear of the far right that this had been happening, but that the people involved were given amnesty, and the social workers and the police who were allowing this to happen were giving amnesty in exchange for telling the truth about it. Or I don't know what the alternative is. I mean, would you accept that?
No, I wouldn't, because there's got to be justice. I mean, the fact is, if this has exposed anything, it's exposed the depth and breadth of the anti-white nature of the system that we live in, okay? And, you know, I look at that and I think to myself, well, we as sort of truth seekers and people who seek natural justice, we absolutely want the truth to come out, but we want justice as well. And I think the truth without justice, or justice without us all knowing the truth, is not good. You know, we need to know what's going to happen. We need to know what happened, and we need to know that we've got justice. We've got another super chat. Glenn19 said, Pakistani grooming gangs are also being covered in the Indian media as well. Something seems fishy with the media bringing up the issue of the Rotherham case right now. I believe this is a push to get Farage elected. Well, I would have said the same, but it seems that Musk has now stabbed him in the back, which is just so odd. So odd.
Yeah, that super chat... It's interesting because it's being given, you know, some degree of coverage now that the Labour Party is in power, in service to an attack on the Labour Party, because it was Labour Council was, and you know, the Labour government was involved. But for the last 14 years, we've had a Conservative government who could have, if they wanted to, you know, it was all there for the taking, have used this against Labour and gone to town on them and said, you know, you were responsible for this horrific crime. We could have had trials. We could have had people brought to account, but it never happened. So now, 14 years later, of just silence, now suddenly it's brought up in this small way. Well, you know, call me cynical. It just seems like party politics, or this new Zionist right attack on the Labour Party, probably with the help of some conservative talking heads and voices.
I do think these things are timed specifically, but I do find Musk a very odd guy, because if Musk was pushing this, and he was pushing this for a good reason, and he was saying, look, Nigel Farage is going to, you know, do the business or whatever, but he just isn't, is he? He's turning around and then saying, but Farage needs to go and Tommy Robinson needs to come in and lead reform. I mean, it's almost comical what he's saying. His solution is just almost comical, isn't it?
Yeah, great. Yeah, exactly. You get Tommy Robinson in charge. And there are much better people from every spectrum, you know, whether it's the far right, whether it's you and Nick Griffin way back in the day, whether it's Labour or kind of left-leaning whistleblowers who tried to do this. I'm forgetting the name of the lady. Jane Seymour?
There was also, and we've got to remember this, there was also actually the Sarah Champion from, I think, either from Rotherham, who was a Labour MP, who tried to do something
about it, and went
public, and they stripped her of any position of authority, absolutely rubbished her, basically ended her career, didn't they, for speaking out about it. You know, it wasn't
like this was a, you know, this was Tommy Robinson putting in the work by himself, and no one would have.
Well, it was me and Nick Griffin that originally raised the issue.
Yeah, but now it's being presented that way, and for the, like we were saying before, for the middle England voters, as if to say, you know, he's an unsung champion of the people, and if it wasn't for Tommy Robinson, we wouldn't know about this. And it's, you know, it's totally fake. That's just not true.
Well, Morgoth came out and tweeted that. He said, look, this is complete fake news. The people who originally spoke about this were Nick Griffin and Mark Collett. They were taken to court for it. You know, they tried to silence them in court and to make it illegal to even talk about grooming. You know, and look, I'm not saying I deserve all the, you know, the praise, because I don't. There was a big team effort in the BNP at the time about this. And, you know, we now are living in a post-BNP world, unfortunately, and we are now trying to, you know, raise, you know, still keep pushing this, because the thing is, it's almost like an onion, isn't it, the grooming gang scandal. It's like an onion. So, you know, when you've got an onion, there's multiple layers, and you keep just going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and I feel like that's what we've done with the grooming gang. So every time something new comes out, it's worse than the last thing that came out. And it just gets worse and worse with every single revelation. But as it gets worse, and as the revelations get more shocking, more stomach-churning, more awful, more harder to read, there will always be, that then becomes an even greater pushback by, you know, the Jess Phillipses of this world. And that Jess Phillips is a foul creature. And I mean a foul creature.
Disgusting.
She is. Do you know what she looks like? Can you remember the film Men in Black?
Yes.
Can you remember the bad guy was like a giant bug wearing human skin?
Yes.
And it was like hideous. So it was like this bug had crawled into a human being and was wearing its skin. And because it was a bug wearing human skin, it didn't quite look natural. It's meant to look like that. It's meant to look freaky because, like, it's obviously the bad guy.
Yeah, Jess like an Phillips, uncanny valley effect.
Jess Phillips looks kind of like an alien monster from a horror film that has basically clothed itself in human flesh. She's just disgusting. And when you see her and when you see the way she behaves, I find her just, as I say, just an awful, awful human being. Just an absolute horrible creature. And I look at her, and you can see that when you see that look on her face, and she's like, no, we're denying any inquiry into it. She is, you can see almost pure evil there. She's foul. But she's one of those sanctimonious Labour members that acts as if she doesn't know. You know, she's power to the people, power to women, power to this. But what about power to all the girls? Oh, no, they were the wrong colour, so, you know.
That's one of the most repulsive things about Jess Phillips, apart from having to look at her face, is the fact that she face. Supposedly is, you know, she is... She LARPs. I'm sure she was working class growing up, but she comes from the background of the people this was happening to, and yet she pretends to be a representative of people like her. You know, girls and women are, you know, the champion of girls and women and the working class, and yet here she is, you know, denying that this ever happened, denying there was ever a
Natty,
problem,
if you get killed, you're miles away from us. If we lose this last game because of this stupidity of yours, I'm not going to be happy.
Uh-oh, I'm gonna step into patriotic shoes here.
You
I'm
are?
Coming back. I'm coming back. Wait, you boys are outside the zone, aren't you?
But we're meant to be sticking together, mate.
Okay.
Right, don't do anything. Let's try and win this.
Okay, I'm just going
to... But yeah, hold. Jess Phillips, hideous. But you, trying to annoy me.
Okay, me or Jess Phillips?
I'd always pick you, mate. I mean, like, and I mean that in every sense. Like, I don't think there's anything. Like, you know, if I had to spend the rest of my life on a desert island, you'd think I'd pick the woman, but I'd pick you, Natty.
I don't know. I think I could. No, I'm not going to finish that for that. Say what I'd do on a desert island with Jess Phillips.
No, Jess Phillips is the kind of person that, like, you know, that you pull the girl of your dreams, and you know, you're like, oh my god, what if I can't hold on? You're like, think of Jess Phillips. Keeps the wolf, as Alan Partridge said, she keeps the wolf from the door.
Oh man, yeah. Oh, watch out, Patriot. You're taking fire from across the valley there. Where is it? There we go.
I see no one.
It's around there somewhere. I just tagged it.
Is he real?
Yeah, I can't stand Jess Phillips. I can't stand...
Well, it's just the sanctimonious nature. Like, one minute it's all about power to the women, and the next minute it's all about, no, silence the women. And, you know, again, it...
This is what I mean. They're the wrong type of women. But they're the wrong type of women to, you know, besuited...
Where's that coming from?
Besuited Eton Toffs. That's who they're the wrong type of victim for. But not for Jess Phillips. They should be exactly the right type of people for Jess Phillips. But, again, Jess Phillips has chosen, like, anti-racist ideology over representing not just her own people, but... her own class of people, from her own area of people.
Where is it? Yeah, a bit like Angela Rayner's another one. A really rough, sort of chavvy woman. But she'd happily hand over, like, young girls from the same background as her. You know, they're happy to sell out the young girls from the same socioeconomic background, like the people they grew up with on the estate, for their job.
It's what I mean. They're more... They care more about the ideology of anti-racism than they do about protecting young girls. I mean, I can say young white girls. Either one, they care about their ideology, whether it's white girls or not. I mean, they probably care less because it's white girls, but they should care more because that's their own people. That's why it's smart so much. That's why it's
Where
a
are
wound.
They?
Won't heal. And every time you think of it, it hurts. It's not just hurt, it makes you angry.
It does.
That's the reason. And you have these trollops who are supposed to be, you know, what is the point of a government? It's to protect its own people. It not only refused, it sold them out, it pimped them out and protected the people hurting them.
Yeah. You know, like the government, the protectors, the representatives, you know, and it's anything but.
Yeah. That's why it's correct to say we are an oppressed people, and it sounds like this kind of.
I had an argument with David Duke about that the other day.
We are repressed people.
Well, I had an argument with David Duke about that on his show the other day, and it really he kind of got to me because he was going on about Palestinians and like. Oh, the Palestinians are like these most oppressed people. I said, they're not. I said, there's so many groups that exist in every Western country to represent Palestinians. But there's no one, you know, there's government ministers who will go out on a limb for Palestinians. But who's going out on a limb for white girls? You know, I said, you keep talking about the number of Palestinians who have been killed in Gaza. Well, that total pales into comparison with the number of white girls that have been raped here in the UK by these, you know, Pakistani Muslim men, or largely Pakistani Muslim men.
I know people personally, I have people I know in my personal life who are, you know, big time pro-Palestine people, and, you know, probably have cried genuine tears at the crimes.
That's what I was saying to him.
And yet, you know, if you bring up this topic, we'll scream bloody murder at you and call you a far-right Nazi and all the rest of it. And you think, okay, fair enough. You found the people who are being hurt, okay, and your kind of liberal priors, your progressive priors are making you stand up for them. But where is this shedding of tears? Where is this gnashing of teeth when your own people are being treated this way? Just it sickens me, and it's not just irritating, it's
where is this guy?
Oh, he's dead.
He committed suicide. That was a bit of a anti-climax, wasn't it?
Oh, it's me. You have to come on the roof. We'll go downstairs then.
Yeah, come down to the
party.
Come down, let's have one last party. We won 3 out of 5, that's not bad. 3 out of 5 and one very close second, which we'd have won if you two hadn't totally fluffed it.
Yeah.
I was performing so well.
Yeah, this topic is not going away. And you know, I know we're finished now, but it's just going to keep coming up, and until the structure of power in this country and in the West in general changes. I think people know what I mean when I say that. This, we are not going to see justice for it. We are just going to have to carry on enduring, you know, more information coming out, like Mark says, where it just gets worse and worse the more you hear, and it just. You can forget about it temporarily, but it's like the microcosm of what's happened to us and why it's happened to us and why it's been allowed to happen to us. It's this horrific betrayal, but not just
to the government,
to their people, but to little girls.
Ended it in style, mate. Outstanding performance. Yeah, the whole thing, mate, is stomach churning. But we have had a good night tonight. I hope you've enjoyed it. It's been a... Other than that, I can't really fault us dying to those stupid Turks. Also, how did they even know we were there? Don't you think it's really odd when we're just noodling around in a little village where no one is, and then two carloads just drive exactly to our position and just know where we are? Like, we've never done that, have we?
Yeah.
But anyway, other than that game, it's been really good. And the one where we came second place, they did have a whole team of four, though, didn't we? And the extra man does make a difference because, you know, I'd taken down two of them, injured one of them. And, you know, if it was 3-on-3, we'd have won that. But it's been really good. And it's been really good chat tonight. I just want to thank you both for being here. Now, obviously, I'm pleased we talked about Christmas. We talked about Musk. We talked about the grooming gangs. We talked about, you know, COVID. We didn't get into the... increased COVID vaccine injuries, which we're being reported on every day in the papers by the same papers that bloody told us to take the jabs. But, you know, there's other times for that. I think it's been a really good night. I've really enjoyed it. I want to thank you both for being here. It's really good. And obviously, Sam's back with his family now. So I don't know when they're going to release his restrictions, but hopefully within the next 12 months or so, we'll have Sam back with us. So, yeah, thank you. So, Natty, do you want to have your final word tonight and say good night, and then we'll close things down?
I think you've pretty much said everything that needs to be said. Well, I will say I'm very much looking forward to having Sam back on this team and making it a four-man squad again. That would be fantastic. But I'll just say this again, don't get too excited about Musk and don't waste energy thinking about it too much. I mean, he's you're just another person on the merry-go-round who gets excited and then disappointed and excited and then disappointed. These people, for the most part, will just let you down. It's proven time and time again.
Agreed. Patreon.
That dour note.
Patriarch, I'm pleased you had a nice Christmas too, although a bit sickly. Hope you're feeling better soon, mate. Is there anything you'd like to plug before we say goodnight?
No, just Happy New Year. It'll be interesting to see what the new year brings, and I'll hopefully will people be up for coming to like the camps and things and just, you know, representing the community. So I'm going to try my best to be there this year. And that's it, just to see what comes ahead. And
indeed,
I might start getting some art, but we'll see.
Well, thank you so much, mate, and I hope you both have a lovely new year. Thank you to the audience, thank you to those who sent the donations, thank you to all the people chatting throughout the evening. It's been really fun. I've enjoyed myself for the most part. Only disappointment was that Sanhok game where we should have won but we came second. We somehow got flanked. Disappointing, but overall, a very good night, and I'd like to say I'll be back on Wednesday, PWR, with iHypocrite. It's his first time on the show, really looking forward to that. Closing in really quickly on that episode 300, so look forward to that. That's going to be a 4-hour special. Natty and the Patriarch will hopefully join me at some point on there as the Nationalist A team. Will you guys both be there?
Absolutely.
Super.
So
that's that. Night, everyone. Hope you have a good return to work if you're back there tomorrow. Hope everyone who's snowed in manages to stay safe and doesn't have any nasty slips on the road. It's very icy where I am. So look after yourselves out there, and I'll see you on Wednesday. Until then, stay strong, keep fighting. We'll be back same time next month. Love you all, and see you all again soon. Thank you and good night.